Hi, everyone. This is Gary, and I have Chad Cox on the telephone for this campfire conversation recording live conference call. Chad and I have known each other for several years, but gotten to know each other far deeper in the last 6 months, just through phone conversations, and actually he's working on the Noble Heart website as well. He has a company called Buzz Rocket Media, and he has completely designed and built the website that you see today, and I'm so grateful for it, and so are so many people, so many other people as well. Several weeks ago, we had a phone conversation, and he was bringing me into part of his story, and I was fascinated by it, both by the uniqueness of his story as well as the commonality of what he went through and what was going on with my own story and with other men, their stories as I hear them as well. And I was just struck by the idea of how much we learn by hearing the experience of other people. So I asked Chad if he would agree to be on this first phone conversation and to tell us some of his story and let us interact with him and ask questions. So, Chad, I want to ask you just to kind of open the book of your life and bring us into a particular chapter that will be helpful to know you and to learn from your experience. So, and everyone, I need to tell you that being the first conversation, I forgot to hit the record button. So you're actually going to kind of come in the middle. No, not even the middle. You will come into the beginning of the conversation, but it won't be his beginning thought. So I apologize for that, but it's part of my learning experience as well. So, Chad, take it away.
Summer of 2000, I think it was, Debbie and I put our house on the market and decided to move to Nashville. And that lasted about a month and a half. And we had several offers, and just something about it didn't seem like the right timing. And we were just, and the reason Nashville just kept coming back was I think it represented to us this time of innocence in our early newlyweds. And that was something that we had talked about then. And we were just kind of hungry for more. I think we were both finding, you know, we were in our late 20s and we're thinking, gosh, we just, you know, we want to be those risk takers. We just, you know, we had what we called it at that time, our Keith Green revival, where we dug out some tapes and listened to Keith Green again. And we were like, oh man. And then we read his, the No Compromise book that his wife wrote later after he had passed on. And it was, you know, we just wanted more. And we ended up around that same time, I think, read Sacred Romance with another couple from this fellowship that we were in. We read it together, the four of us, and over a few Fridays that they would come over to dinner. And it was, gosh, when was it? I think it was 2001, summer of 2001, I read Wild at Heart. And so I was kind of primed and ready for that message. And really had, I knew about the good heart and really was kind of there and understood that, but what I didn't realize is how crippled I was as a man, and how much I was really lacking in my own self-confidence, my own identity, and that book really brought that out. And then I went to, and then I encountered you the first time at the Wild at Heart retreat in October of 2001, and they were just...
Okay, Chad, let me ask you, let me just take you back to when you said I didn't realize how crippled
through this.
I was as a man.
Yes.
Say more about that. What do you mean personally when you say that?
I just think I was really struggling. I think hollow would be a good word. I've always been real. I've always made it huge. I mean, it's always been so core to me to be as honest and straightforward with people and try to tear down as many barriers between myself and others as possible. And I've done that always by just taking off my own mask, because then people have this, they relax around you then and they can take off their mask. But inside, I was always comfortable with that. But I think what I was uncomfortable with was the fact that when I did just be myself, I just always felt there wasn't a strength there. I felt made of putty on the inside, I guess I would say. I would say that I felt, you know, I remember telling a friend once, man, I just feel like I don't, you know, I was probably 28, 29 years old. And I said, I just don't feel any different than I did when I was 7 years old. I mean, I don't feel any more. I've been kind of waiting for this something to arise, I mean, something to wake up finally when I hit adulthood, and I, you know, that kind of came and went, and I'm still waiting.
Yeah. Yeah, the funny thing is, I don't honestly know of a man who wouldn't say that he feels much younger than he is. And I don't mean that in a good way. I don't mean like, you know, I'm 55, but I feel like I'm 27. I mean in interior way, you know, as far as strength of character and being and maturity. I just think that's part of the, you know, the curse, the plague on a man's life. But so what, mm-hmm. so what did Wild at Heart, the book and the conference, what did that, I mean, did that give you hope? Did it give you clarity?
I think that's a great word, hope. I think it gave me hope that there's more, that I'm missing something, and there may be more here. And you know, I want to stop and say something, too. I think this is why I also just did not feel comfortable in the corporate world and had to get out of that as quickly as possible, even though I was working for a company that was creative and kind of a marketing arm of an agency. I just, in creative arm of an agency, creative of an ad agency, I just didn't, I think I felt, I don't know, it's funny, I remember being 22 years old and just the first few days of being hired, I think I just felt like a square peg in a round hole. I didn't know how to fit in this environment because it looked so stuffy to me. And I found myself performing and wearing the mask so much and just trying to be, and you know what, and it may have, all of it, it, really what we're talking about is my perception of what people wanted me to be, you know, what
right.
people,
right.
what I thought people wanted. It wasn't ever hammered on me, this is who we need you to be, but I just felt so uncomfortable in that environment. And so I think I always felt more comfortable just opening up, and that's why singing and writing, that felt like me in a way. I mean, there were times when I could write songs and share them the next day in a coffee shop kind of setting or even in a small group in someone's home. And, you know, there would be somebody there that it just touched and even brought tears, and I just loved that. And so going to the Wild at Heart retreat, I didn't know what to expect, really. I think the book kind of put a magnifying glass on the fact that I didn't feel like, you know, that I knew there was something wrong, that I, you know, had just been kind of gliding on and trying to figure it out myself, but not really wanting to go there, I guess, either. And when I went to that retreat, I just really felt there were some things, all of the men that spoke of that, you were there and others, but there were really some things that I felt challenged on, and I even felt like, gosh, am I just playing it safe? I didn't feel, I think at that point, I didn't feel like I was really growing anymore. We'd bought a home, and I was even start. I think, and so much of this, by the way, is the meaning I gave it then, and that's what I'm talking about. I think I can tend to go, okay, I see why I felt that back then, but you know, now I see through different eyes. But at the time, I'm just trying to put myself back into who I was at the time, my late 20s, going to the Wild at Heart retreat. I think there was this fear, even though I'd taken this risk to go out on my own, I'd started my own businesses, you know, or my own company 4 years before that. I think there was this feeling that I had still sold out and somehow I was missing out on more and wanting. So I felt really challenged. I remember you showed that monster. Do you remember that monster.com commercial that you showed? When I grow up, I want to file all day. I still remember and that just like pegged me because I'd never seen that commercial until you showed it that evening. I was like, oh my gosh. I mean, you know, I want to be a brown nose. Yes, sir. Thank you, sir. Coming, sir. And so I guess there was something in me that just really felt smaller. I felt I was living a smaller life in the role that I'd created. And I knew I'd created it for myself. Nobody put me in this because it was my own company. It was just, you know,
okay,
my own company.
Chad, sorry. So let me ask you, when you played music, when you sang, when you entertained, when you performed in that way, how old did you feel then, typically?
Gary, that's a great question. You've never asked me that one.
Mm-mm. I mean, did you feel yourself then? Did you feel like, hey, I don't know how old you were at that point. Did you feel like yourself?
I think I did. I mean, now that you're just, I mean, nobody's ever asked me that question. I'm trying to figure out how to answer that. Try to put myself back in there. I think I just felt ageless, just me. You know what I mean?
Right.
And just, not belittled, not condescended, not feeling like I'm too, you know, like I don't know anything and everybody's figuring that out really quickly and kind of snickering at me, even though they seem like, you know, they seem like everything's okay, but I'm, you know, that's kind of how I felt in work world and, you know, an adult world. But yeah, I think when I sing, there's definitely something that feels like it's transcendent and just even beyond, beyond age, and just feels like I'm just me, and there's no, I think you know, there are times when it's not going well, and it's because I'm self-conscious, but those times when I'm just giving a gift and I've forgotten all about myself, that's mm-hmm. when, and I know you've had those experiences, teaching and sharing with people. You're just a conduit. It's just passing through, and you just feel, alive. And, so that's a good question.
Yeah. Okay. So keep going. So now things are awakening and you want to pursue some things. Okay.
I think I'm also kind of hard on myself because I think I heard your words and it wasn't like I'm sitting in a cubicle or I'm selling shoes or something that I just absolutely hate. But at the same time, I just felt this stirring that there's got to be more. And so I left that Wild at Heart retreat. And I'll tell you the things that I really left with that were really good, that really changed really forever. And even, you know, obviously we're always working on things, always improving, but I just really went home and just really, it just really challenged me to give more to my wife and my little boy, who's now almost 12. He was, three at the time, and I started getting back to my heart, which was, yes, music, but also getting outdoors, loving the outdoors, getting away and going on some little trips together as a family and spending time out in nature, going hiking and just really pouring into my child. And then we had another, we have four now, but, you know, but we, I think what I really left with was this feeling of, this transcendent feeling that I'm a part of something bigger than myself. And it's, yes, it's the kingdom of God, but I think it was the feeling that, wow, there were these other men there that were touched by this as well. And we left with something, and there was something imparted. It really felt like that you and the other guys there imparted something. And I would call it permission. And that is, and just really a blessing on who we are, who, you know, I felt personally a blessing on me to be Chad and to really start finding out who that is. Number one, that was the first, that felt like to me was my obvious assignment leaving there was who am I really? I have a perception of who I am, but is that really who I am? And I think I'm still absolutely on that quest. And, in some ways don't feel like I'm much closer, Gary.
Yeah, I know. I know. Okay, so you're about in your story, you're about to make this pretty big move, right?
Okay, so like I said, in 2000, we almost moved to Nashville. And then here's what happened. 2002, I didn't even tell you, in 2001, things just really went belly up for us, and business was just really bad. And it was right after 9/11, especially, things just dove. And then suddenly, 2002, January, things just really started taking off. And so I'm suddenly in the middle of, you know, I'm loving my wife more than I've ever, more than I had since we were newlyweds. I think we've always had a great relationship. She's always been my best friend, but I think I just kind of dropped the ball. I didn't know what to do. And I really got good direction on that, I think, from the Wild at Heart message. But she and I were just in sync again. It was just like being newlyweds all over again. But I'm in this renaissance with writing songs. I'm getting up at like 4 a.m. with these inspirational lyrics. I mean, I'm dreaming songs. I'm going down, and they're not like, you know, Fruit Loop lyrics. They're fantastic. And it just feels like I'm just this conduit and this bucket just running around catching this creativity as it's falling out of the sky. And so I was just having this amazing time writing music. Business is taking off, and I'm going out with my little boy, taking him hiking, and we went on a fantastic vacation that summer of 2002. And, you know, I just feel so alive again. And it just, you know, life is wonderful. And at the end of 2002, we were away at a cabin, actually over in Arkansas, and Debbie and I were praying, and we just felt like the Lord was telling us, and I don't know how we knew this, but we both just kind of tossed. I don't want to ever say that, yeah, we heard God audibly, because I'm the last person to even hear him that clearly, but seriously, we just both had this sense, I think something is up, and I think maybe there may be something going on with my business, and maybe even we can move to Colorado. We weren't even talking about Nashville. That, I remember at that point, we were just thinking, hey, let's just maybe just make a fresh start of things. So we just had this feeling that there was a new beginning, and we didn't know what it was. And early 2003, really by the end of 2002, we just started feeling like, I think I'm going to be walking away from my business and doing something else. And I'm secretly hoping maybe it has something to do with music. I'm not going to push it, but that's kind of a real deep desire there at that time, and because I'm enjoying it. So anyway, we get into 2003, and I didn't have to shut the doors to my business. It just really shut on me. I mean, after coming out of a great year, I think what happened was this market where I live in Oklahoma, it was kind of a delayed reaction for me anyway, right after 9/11, just really people started tightening their belts. And tightening, you know, just sewing up their checkbooks really from outsourcing. And so I was an outsourced expense. And so I got the chop. And so suddenly all these clients that I had in the past were no longer there. They weren't calling me. And I was calling, you know, and just kind of waiting, and my office line wasn't ringing. And so I finally, about 3 months into that, you know, we're getting little piecemeal jobs here and there, but it wasn't like before, and our savings is starting to really go fast. And by April, I remember making a decision. I think we need to sell our house now while we can get our equity and still get good value on the home. And maybe it's time to just start over. Maybe we scale back here, I'm rushing through a process here of over several weeks, but we decided, you know what, let's just go for it. Got the house ready by July. We sold our house in 3 weeks cash to a family that was from out of state. They just had one day to find a home, found ours. We were selling it by owner and sold it. And so the 3 weeks we sold our home, we're thinking, okay, this has God's handwriting all over. We got top dollar for it. They were from a higher price market, so they didn't even question us on price or anything. And so.
Okay, so Chad, let me ask you.
Yeah.
Let me ask you this. As you think back at that point now, what felt like the more primary motivation? Was it running away from a collapsing house, so to speak, or was it running to a dream, running to your desires and the life you really wanted to live? What felt like the more predominant motivation?
You know, I would say it was a mixture of both. I think there was this...
Okay.
I would seriously, I think, and she and I have often used this analogy or metaphor of God stirring up the nest. And it felt to us like the things like the you know, the faucet being shut off business-wise and things just starting to dry up. It felt like, maybe this is a nod and, you know, maybe this is our kind of stirring up the nest. It's time to fly and try some of these things. Maybe it even felt like, you know, this feels like God's grace that he's not going to let us just sit here and stay comfortable, that we're going to actually, you know, pursue some of these things we've talked about at this point for 8 years in our marriage. And so we just decided, let's go for it. Let's move to Nashville. By this time, I've got quite a few friends there. We even have some family there. And
Okay. So before you go any farther, let me ask you this. John Hart asked the question.
Okay.
What were some of the indicators that something was about to change? You talked about less clients, right? Business-wise, it was becoming slimmer, right? Less clients.
That actually came after kind of it was more of an internal inkling that things were about to change more than it was in the natural. I mean, the natural stuff came after we had this kind of internal almost aha that, hey, we had this feeling. It was almost, I would guess, I don't know what to call it, just this sense of, I think we suddenly hit a different season and we both felt it. And I don't know why. I can't even tell you why. It was just kind of in this time of talking and kind of praying together, but just she and I just sharing this moment together at Thanksgiving after the kids had gone to bed in this cabin where we were staying. And yeah, so I hope that answers his question.
No, good. Yeah, keep going. So you're about to, or you're moving now to Nashville.
So we had relationships there. And here's what's cool about this. I had not really unpacked this until you really started pushing me on this. And, you know, you heard my story back when we were in the calling intensive back in May. But you just really started kind of pushing me on this in the last few weeks and just conversations after I read your book, It's Your Call, and just was kind of reminiscing or just kind of even, I think I was just kind of, you know, bouncing some ideas or just thoughts and just kind of sharing this with you. And you just started kind of pushing me harder. And I realized that I hadn't really even unpacked this ourselves. And so even she and I were today a little bit talking just so I could get back into the mindset of where we were back in 2003. And she reminded me, it really was, I'm so about relationships. And at this point, I'm feeling dry. I'm feeling alone. I'm feeling like, wow, I've got this renaissance going on artistically. I don't really have any peers at the moment that I feel can relate to where I'm at. And at the same time, we've got a lot of different things. We've got the economic side, the pressure I'm feeling there. And then the good side of, wow, we're just, you know, I'm in this renaissance with writing, but at the same time, longing for deeper relationships that we feel like are connecting with us in this heart arena, you know, with music. And I've got good friends. I've got a friend at this point in 2003, and he and I are still this close. We talk just as much. And he and I at that point are talking an hour a week on the phone. He's in music, and he's an artist. He's working for a record company, but as a salesman, but he's, you know, just a good friend. And then another friend that's there that he and his wife are friends of Debbie and I. And so we're just feeling like, wow, let's just go for it. We've got good relationships there. We're feeling the love. You know, let's go share this. You know, we all have this kind of dream together, and we don't really even know what it is. It's just we're kind of like we all have this this disease called music. And misery loves company. So we all just, you know, be together and kind of share in that misery. I'm kidding. But seriously, so we got there, and honestly, we didn't really think past moving to Nashville. And once we're there, it's kind of like, now what? And so the cool thing was I did have one client during that summer that started popping up, and they started sending me, this is after we got the house really sold and we're moving, they started sending me business, and it was regular and it was monthly. And so they're back in Tulsa and we're there. And so we're getting about, you know, about 75% of what we need to live on once we're moved is coming through this one client. And besides that, we've got our equity from our home with us. So it, you know, it's a lot of foolish risk, honestly, when I get it now. I'm very highly critical of all the stuff that we were doing at that point. But I think it's simply because probably because there's some pain involved. But I think what we found was we couldn't find the friends that we did have there were not as available as we had hoped, and we were trying to reach out and make new friends. And I think this really becomes more a story about isolation. That's what you pinpointed. We were talking a few weeks ago, a few days ago. And I think what happened was we just really were not connecting, and then we had left even what connection we did have here as our base back at home. And I think just things were just, I would say the machinery was needing oil that comes from relationship, and it was starting to rust up and it was starting to grind. And there was a lot of, in me, I was still writing music and there was that joy, but there was that anxiety of now what? And there were some cool things that happened. I don't want to go into any of the details, but there were some great doors that were starting to open for me musically. And I started to kind of go down that path. But the truth was, we don't even need to get into all the details of that, but the truth was I saw the writing on the wall, and that was, what about income? How are things going to work as I'm pursuing this desire? And I'm also feeling, and this is the other thing that's come up recently, and that is I really wanted in my music to feel a connection with other people that I'm doing this with. Like when I did my CD release concert in 99, I was working with a band on that, and we were together, and that was, to me, you know, something that we're all working together on, this music. I never wanted it to be this solo thing, which it ended up being, and and that to me was bittersweet because I love music, but I love people and I love connecting. And I liken it to when I was a kid, I 67 Mustang, it looked like. Anyway, I don't know if you guys heard that, but when I was a kid, it was getting together with my friends and building a treehouse. And, you know, with me, with music, I wanted it to be building this music and building this connection with an audience. And I just wasn't finding that. And it was really, really, it was quite disheartening there. And I won't go into details, but really over the 12 months that we lived in Nashville, it just got to the point where we felt discouraged. And I was really down in my confidence, really feeling a lot of shame. And probably a lot of the shame I felt was unnecessary. And it was simply because I didn't have balance of a Gary Barkalow in my life at that point. Or any really other men that had lived and journeyed in some of these ways that, I had peers, but they hadn't taken the kinds of risks I was taking. And they didn't know what to do with me, frankly. Some of my friends, they just, I couldn't find any answers.
What did the out of balance state look like when you talk about that?
I think
you felt out of balance, right? You didn't have the counsel and people.
Yeah, I think making things bigger and harder than they really were.
Okay.
I think I have a tendency when I'm alone to zoom in on things and make something microscopic huge. Like even a feeling or, just blowing things out of proportion, a comment, somebody, had some experiences with music that were not good. I mean, I had some great doors opening, and then I had one industry experience where somebody had some real critical words for my music, and that just exploded. I mean, I just made that too big. I gave it too much meaning and didn't have that balance of, even a band of brother, let alone a band of brothers. Plural, but didn't have that balance of someone coming alongside me saying, that just didn't matter,
In other words, what you were missing because of this isolation you were in once again, probably a similar isolation just before you moved from Oklahoma and then an isolation that eventually you kind of encountered in Nashville, what you were missing, I'm assuming from what you're saying, is really perspective, right? Other people bringing their experience and eyes in your life and giving you perspective on what was happening.
Yeah, I think that's it. And I don't want to use the word paranoid, but it's probably the best word I can use. But I think I was getting even into, this is darkness. Is this the enemy coming after me? And just kind of, playing a little Don Quixote in my head. I think I was just really getting out of balance. And it was from, I think, stress and pressure. I failed to mention that, I had this company that was in Oklahoma that was hiring me on a monthly basis. Well, three, maybe 4 months into our stay in Nashville living there, they actually filed bankruptcy. I got a letter from them one day. I was like, uh-oh. So there goes that one leg table that we were standing on financially. So now things are going to, home equity is not going to last that much longer. And, it lasts another 7-8 months, but I was scrambling to find more business. I was even, I was looking for full-time production work, and at that time, even Nashville was hurting for that. But at the same time, Nashville's their own economy was hurting. It was hard to even to find the kind of business I was looking for. At the same time, I had this whole disheartening thing going on with music that it's not turning out the way I wanted. Really, what I wanted wasn't, there were some friends of ours that were connecting us to people in the industry, and that really wasn't what I wanted. What I really wanted was just connection with somebody around music, and I wanted it to feel like I got there for a purpose, that there was this, what did they say, divine, divine encounter with someone else, and just that we're he's there, I'm there, and we both have this dream, and we're encouraging each other. That's what I was looking for, and my friend, a good friend that's still a good friend would encourage me long distance from music. At that time, he was going through some personal struggles that really distracted him from us even being able to connect on a heart level during that year I was there that we had even from long distance. So I just really got more and more isolated, and we weren't fellowshipping. We couldn't we were looking for the ideal fellowship, and obviously, had some pretty high standards. Looking back, I think we should have just taken what we could find. But I
well,
think
and,
we.
And so let me throw out an idea as we're talking, because here's what's striking me, and that is that I think when our heart awakens, what we tend to do, probably because we're just not used to having it awake, we don't know kind of how to handle it, what to do with it. I'm just wondering if the commonality is we tend to kind of go to extremes with it. In other words, maybe our first thought is it's all about desire. It's all about being happy. It's all about me. It's all about what God's put in me.
Yeah.
Or we could go, and we can then go to the extreme of whatever's in the way, it's always Satan. It's always spiritual warfare. or something like that versus it's a number of things. It's go after your desire, but the enemy's there. On the other hand, God has to develop our heart. On the other hand, there is the mix-up of the flesh in this. And I think that I know for my life, that's just what's so helpful to have other men in my life who can just at least question me and say, do you really convinced it's all that right now? Or do you think there could be something else? I just wonder if that's not the first thing we tend to do when we go after a desire, maybe for the first time as awakened heart is extreme.
Yeah, and I would say that feeling the financial pressure that we're looking back from, and just giving myself some grace. I mean, obviously, so many times, and you've heard me say it, I just thought, what an idiot. We should have kept the house. We should have never done. And even today, my wife is saying, I have no regrets, Chad. I'm so glad we did what we did. And so, she still stands behind it. She's blinded by love. But I look back and I think, well, no wonder, I'm feeling the financial pressure because business is drying up. And I'm thinking maybe this is God leading us. And the fact that our house sells 3 weeks into putting it up on the market. And, it's just all these things. I mean, there's even some little funny, cute things that we had joked about. Like we tried, Debbie and I, as we're getting the house ready for the market, I totally screwed up the kitchen, okay? And I just, at the end of it, I said, oh, my gosh, it reminds me of Rocky Balboa's apartment. But, I was thinking it was New York, but he was, he was in, where was that, Pittsburgh? I can't remember. But anyway, he's
Philadelphia. Yeah.
Philadelphia, thanks. But anyway, I kept talking about it, oh, my gosh, because I just kept thinking, oh, man, I just made it look like an Italian kitchen, but, a literal Italian kitchen, there were some little funny nods that felt like, okay, God's hearing our conversation and he's even answering it, because the people that came in and loved our kitchen that I hated because I messed it up and understand my great grandmother's Italian. So I was trying to do that right, but I didn't do it right. It was bad, Gary. I don't ever invite me over for a painting party. Because I totally screwed up the cabinets, but these people came in and they were actually from New York, from the East Coast, and they were Italian and they loved it. And I thought, oh, okay, if I can fool them, then it must be good, because I just, all the time I've just joked about how terrible this is. So anyway, we had a lot of little things like that, like little, just felt like comical little nods of God winking at us saying, yep, you're on the right path. We just moved that way, and it felt like the right thing to do. And I still can just go, huh, I don't know what happened. I don't even know what that's about. In fact, I told you there's even a lot of shame involved in this part of the story. And I'm starting to get your perspective on it. I'm starting not to feel that shame anymore when I talk about it, but it's probably because you primed primed me on telling this so many times in the last few weeks that I'm starting to live with it and be more comfortable with it, but I'm telling you, it was so hard for me to even think about it. And I think that's why I hadn't even unpacked this, because I just felt like one of those flaky people that you read about.
That's what amazes me, Chad, and I'm sure these guys would all agree. I'm hearing the story, and this does not seem like a big deal. Now, I'm not saying it wasn't hard and it wasn't painful, but the way you seem to feel it, like there was so much shame, and it's hard for me to talk about this, and I'm thinking, gosh, it was hard, but it didn't sound like that big of a deal. I mean, and obviously, again, our internal reality can be different than the external reality. And what affects us is the internal. So let me ask you, put words to the shame you were feeling.
Okay, yeah, I was trying to think, why was I feeling shame? And I'll tell you why, and I don't mind just totally unpacking this. I felt like this Wild at Heart retreat thing that I went to where I met you for the first time and I still feel like this, was a commissioning of sorts. It felt like Chad becomes a man round two. I mean, maybe my round one was when Debbie and I got the day we got married, but there was something about that weekend that felt, there was something that happened, and I felt a physical change inside. There was a strength that I came home with that I hadn't had. And so it felt like, and there was an impartation, whatever you want to call it, a confidence, a blessing, whatever word you want to use, that's what I felt. And so I think there was, I wouldn't even say it was pride, but I think there was this excitement, like, we're kind of like on God's radar again. You know, he's kind of like, likes us and wants to, Debbie and I even in so many ways, the church it was just this small fellowship here, when they sent us out to Nashville, little did they know we were going to have to come back just a few months later, a year later. But when they sent us out, it was like we were missionaries going into this new land, and it was just kind of this cool commissioning that they even did for us. And it was, it felt like this big deal. And often I think we just put a lot of meaning on it. Maybe that we shouldn't have, but at the same time, at that time, it gave us joy to give it that meaning. But looking back, it's also, when you put a lot of risk in something by hoping a lot in that deal or whatever that is, that thing to happen, something that you're hoping, and we didn't even know it was nebulous. We just knew, we felt like we were going out into something, and we felt like it was almost like Abraham, honestly, like, go to the land that I will show you. And it was kind of like, we felt like we were, I'll tell you this, we felt alive. Because when you take that kind of risk and you don't even know why you're doing it and you're moving your family across country, it just feels, it really is kind of a buzz. And there is definitely, you're definitely alive in that moment. And I think, it almost felt like, and I think the meaning I gave it, and I don't know Debbie did, I can't speak for her, but I know the meaning I felt like was almost like, I screwed up. I failed somehow. I disappointed God, and I got disqualified somehow along this path, and I disqualified myself, and I kind of I just kind of missed it, and he was pulling the plug on the operation and sent us home. It was kind of, I think that's the meaning that I gave it. And now I don't give it that meaning anymore, but that's, at the time, that I think that's why there was so much shame in it.
So in some ways it felt like you were returning back home in failure, right?
Yeah.
You lost.
Yeah.
And
we didn't even have a set goal, so I don't know what we really failed, to be honest. So.
Right. Okay, so now one of the things that you talked about in the beginning, in an earlier conversation, was you talked about when you came back from Wild at Heart, you were still in Oklahoma at the time, your heart was just coming alive. You were saying you would go over to the university there, and you would sit there in the kind of a coffee shop kind of a thing, or cafeteria,
yeah,
or whatever it was, right? And you would just sit there and have a cup of coffee and be writing or whatever, and you would get in a conversation one after another with people and kind of talk to them about the awakened heart and all of this and how,
yeah,
alive you were feeling, because you were connecting with people deeply. You were doing what you loved, right?
That was it, yeah. And it was off campus, but right next to campus. Oral Roberts University is what I'm talking about, actually, in Tulsa. And
right.
It was a coffee shop there called Nardaggio's, and a friend of mine from school started that. But I would just go over there, and it was just cool because it would just happen. I would go meet a friend over there, and I'd be talking to him just about our desires and how that's the roadmap, to what God is, wanting to do in our hearts and in our lives. And I was just, these guys would just start lighting up, and I'm feeling like Gary Barcos in there, bouncing these things off. And I don't really, in some ways, really just kind of speaking, not really in knowledge, because I've experienced it a little. I mean, I have absolutely experienced desire fulfilled. So I guess all of us have in some points. But I'm just telling them what I know and what I've heard and what's been reawakened in me. And it would happen. This guy would have to go, and then somebody else would happen to come in and sit down with me, I'd be there 3 or 4 hours, and there's just this electricity, and I just felt alive. And I'd go home, and obviously in between, this is between business and and, you know, and serving clients and doing what I do. But I then, you know, go home and I'd have so much life. I would just go home and say, hey, Debbie, let's get Jordan and then our baby Sarah after she's born. Let's go to the park. Let's all go play. I just felt like a kid again, but in a good way, not in that way that I described earlier, feeling like I don't really know anything, but more of a sense of aliveness.
Okay. Well, let me stop you here for a second and let me throw out an idea. And then if any of these guys want to ask a question, they can kind of raise their hand and I can see it by hitting star two and they can ask and all that. But so here's what strikes me from your story. First of all, you talked about almost feeling a commissioning from Wild at Heart, you know, and that's a good thing. You know, you are a man, you do have a masculine heart, you do have a strength about you, you have what it takes, your desires are good, all those things that we rarely hear, and that you just came alive from this. But what I was hearing you saying is you kind of ran out with this without any other perspective, counsel, advice, you know, to work through your awakened heart with. But as Sam was saying on here, he said, I love this guy. I love the risk that he took, and it really is amazing. But my impression is, and I think it was really good that you did this. I think that's amazing. Most men don't have the courage or a married couple to do what you did. But, you know, you run out to this place pursuing your dream, and there you find you don't quite have the fellowship that you were wanting to have, that sometimes as we pursue our heart's desire, there aren't the other people that are like us there, and then it becomes really what felt so good about desire now becomes diminished because we're so alone.
Yeah.
You know, you come back feeling like, you know, defeated, like you blew it, and you have to come back to the people that commissioned you, which I'm sure is totally not true, but I know that internal reality. So let me ask you this question, and then if anyone else wants to ask a question, whether by chat or by raising their hand and asking you verbally. So now today, Chad, the man you are today, both as an older man and as a man who has matured, grown, what would you say to that younger Chad during the time when the business was getting rough, you had this awakened heart, you're talking about writing music again and relationship, what would you tell that younger Chad today, right now?
What would my flesh tell him?
No.
Idiot.
Yeah. What would you tell?
Do you mind if I revisit that question, like, and go somewhere for like one more minute, two more minutes?
Sure, one or two more minutes. Yep.
Okay. When we came back, and I was thinking about the shame question, I think what else happened, which I haven't covered yet, and that is it felt almost like a disciplining, and now I know God is not this way, but when we came back, Debbie was actually pregnant with child number three, and we were excited and had this sense it was a little boy, and so we're now boy, girl, and then soon to be boy, and about halfway through the pregnancy, there wasn't a heartbeat at one of our ultrasounds, one of the doctor's visits. And we ended up losing a baby and had to go through labor and delivery for a stillborn. Hmm. And that was really, really hard. That baby actually, to us, almost really represented the Nashville experience because it was conceived in Nashville and it just felt like, wow, this is just kind of like, what a lousy ending. I mean, it was really, really hard. It was seriously painful for Debbie. But even in that, we still had this joy. Even I remember holding this little boy I was feeling bitter at that point when we knew he was gone. And we asked our doctor actually if we could wait a few days and because we really again took another risk and decided to call the church and pray for a miracle, which did not happen. And so ended up going back and had to go through the whole labor and delivery thing. And so we'd been through before, twice before, but this time it was, there was no reward in the end. But I say that, but it was still rewarding to get to hold this little guy and look at him. And my heart just melted because I knew that was not God. God did not do this to us. He was not punishing me. He's not killing my son because I made some unforgettable mistake. You know, this is not, I'm not David. This is not that story. And I need to not give it that meaning. And I felt like there was just this closeness that actually brought back to Debbie and I then after going through this. And it was really even that experience of going through that, losing Michael Daniels, what we named him, and had a small service after that and burial. But it was after that I decided we wouldn't go back to Nashville, even though all our stuff, all of our belongings were still there. That's how quickly we left. We left them in storage. And I actually had a job that I could have taken, like the day after the funeral for the baby. And for Debbie's sake, I decided we needed to be where relationship is here in Oklahoma, and I actually turned it down. So we had an opportunity to go back and give it a round two. And sometimes I don't think I've ever really regretted it. I think sometimes I've just had the question, what if, but I think overall it was good. So what would I say to myself back then? I think I would say, dude, drink from some other fountains. Get some perspective, not only from other people around you, but throw that book aside. It's a good book. Find another book or two or five or 12. Get some other people to speak into your life. And, you know, God can speak through those things too. Don't be, you know, be open. And yes, I think I like, and thanks, Sam, thank you for your encouragement. I think I do, too, admire that risk-taking, and because there is something admirable about that. I think I've sometimes just really hammered myself because of that and thought I'm too much of an extremist. But I think I would say be open to taking risk, but get some wisdom. There's a wisdom in a multitude of counsel is the first place I think I would go now.
Okay. That's really good. Drinking from different streams and you know, with counsel of others, and I think that's really good. Sam, I know you had a question. Why don't you ask that?
Yeah, Chad, and thanks for the comments about the risk. You know, my experience of guys is there's so many guys who take no risks. You know, and when they look back at the end of their life, their biggest regret is they never took a risk. But that's just a comment. My question for you is, do you think it's more scary or difficult? What is more scary or difficult? Finding your calling, finding what you're supposed to be, finding your glory, or walking into your glory, walking into your calling? What's more difficult or scary, finding it or walking into it?
Boy, I'd have to be on the walking. I don't know. Because which is, now you asked it two ways. You said which is more difficult, but also which is more scary. I think there's this initial aha when you feel like this is something I know I'm made for, and then there's suddenly silence on the other end of the line, and you're trying to figure out what next, and you don't know what next. So I would say I would have to opt for walking into it. There's almost this real, I think there can be this real honeymoon experience with, oh, this is what I'm called to do, and you kind of can even go out and tell people and be real excited about it, and I've met those people, and you've met them, and I've been that person, and it's so, yeah, but now what? And so
yeah.
It's easier to be all talk, but not really have any skin in the game.
Yeah, and that's one of the reasons I love the risk you took. I just love it. I really do.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Chad,
mm-hmm.
I mean, I know that we can look back and say, oh, I was an idiot, but you know what? I'd rather be a brave, courageous, risk-taking idiot than a couch potato idiot. All talk, no
yeah.
show.
Yeah,
and Sam, that's a fascinating question. As you asked, is it more difficult to find your calling or walk into it? And as you say that, I'm thinking about this in myself in conversations, and I think, you know, for some guys, it's finding it because their heart is so dull, so asleep, so assaulted that they don't have a clue. And you know, you and I have heard stories, and I'm thinking, I don't know where to go with this guy. It's so shut down.
Yeah.
I don't know how to help
yeah.
him find it.
Yeah.
And yet there are people, you know, like Chad, whose heart is so awakened.
Yep.
And if anything, he probably has so many ideas, and it, I can see how Chad would say, no, I think it's more difficult actually walking into it. Yeah, that's a great question.
Yeah.
That was a fantastic question.
Well, listen, I have another question.
Yeah, go for it.
I love the way you talked about singing, writing, sort of living artistry, artistically. I mean, even the way you speak is sort of poetic or artistic. I love hearing you talk. I just do. And I have a question about your singing and writing. What is it that makes you feel, what is it about singing and writing that makes you feel transcendent? You know, that is there something, are you seeing something beneath that desire? What about the singing and writing makes you feel transcendent?
Hmm.
Is it the connection to the audience?
Go ahead. It is, but I think it's the connection with myself,
mm-hmm.
the connection that I feel with my maker. I mean, I just feel like it's almost like everything gets in alignment when I'm doing it right. I mean, there are obviously anything we can do from our head or from the right, wrong place. So my disclaimer here is I'm talking about when everything's right, you know, when everything's on. And I think it's this connection with eternity. I mean, that's got to be what it is. I've never thought that. That's another good question. I think it's this feeling that the song is coming from a deeper place than even I know how to find. And it's coming from a deeper place through me. It's almost like when I'm writing, I mean, there is the process of writing. There's a great joy in this birthing process. It really is like a birth. It's like, you know, you have a baby. It's like, where did that come from?
You know, I can explain it if you need help.
No, exactly. But you see this your child, and it's like, whoa, this is amazing. This is wild. And that's the same kind of process, kind of a, you know, you're floating 2 feet off the ground kind of feeling when I write something that when I nail this, when I write this lyric that's this, that hooks me in a way that I know is going to open up some hearts and get some people to think from a different perspective. And I would always strive for writing a song that where I'm revealing something of my life. No, even if it's not something even about myself that I'm writing, I try to reveal because I always felt this sense, I'm getting really kind of opening up the door here quite a bit on my thought processes behind this, but I always had this sense that if I can unveil, that will cause other people to unveil, and then God can kind of just do his thing.
See, that's I love the way you said that. I'm sorry to interrupt you, Chad, but, you know, as I listen to your story, there's this thing where you talk about when you're writing, you sort of, you're knowing yourself. And what did you say earlier? You had something, you had this great quote, I can't even remember, but you said something about you feeling ageless. You know, it's like the true you that's just going to go on forever. It's not the you at a particular stage. It's the real, bare, essential you.
You're right. I did say that, didn't I? That's
yeah.
Right.
And
yeah, so you know, you're making me think that it is eternity. It is eternal.
And I think that's beautiful. I mean, I got to just say it's beautiful. And I also like the fact that you talk about how you touch other people. In other words, I feel like there's a way that, you know, isolation has been a part of your story. But through the music, you're actually able to make a connection to people. You're able to reveal who you are. And in some ways, it feels like you're drawing out who they are. I don't know. You know, I'm just listening to you.
Wow. Huh. Would you be available for counseling?
No. Are you kidding? I'm receiving it.
I'm thinking I'm getting some great insight here. This is awesome. I mean, even what you just said, I'm just thinking, wow, that's even what I love to do about what I do now for even what I've done with Gary and helping the Noble Heart come alive visually with graphics and the new website and everything. It's like,
mm-hmm.
That's really cool. I'm seeing how this is all interconnected now. And no, I've never really fully seen that, Sam, until you just said that. So,
yeah, well, and that's such a profound point. And the other thing, let me throw in when you got, as I'm listening to you two, and that is, you know, you were telling me, Chad, that for a while, the recent past, you were just really hating your work. And maybe hate is a strong word, but you disliked it. It was felt like it was life-taking. You just trudged through it because it was your living. And you said kind of, as I'm getting more relationally connected now, I'm getting out of isolation, you're actually enjoying your work more. And it's so amazing how relationship is so tied to our calling, to our gifting, to our glory, to our desires. I mean, one without the other is fairly empty. Relationship without living out the desires of our heart and our place in this world can be empty, as can living in desires but being in isolation.
Yeah. That's really good. Yeah, you're right, Gary. And I am enjoying work, I think, so much more, my business, so much more now. There are some things, I will say, through the whole Nashville experience, there was an identity that I was wearing that I just didn't want to do anymore. And it was in the area of video production. That was really a big bulk of what I was doing. You know, I'd been doing web and all of that, but that was really the majority of what I was doing. And I just kept praying, God, I just don't want to do that anymore. And that's one of the cool things that came through this whole shedding is I just don't do that anymore. So, I mean, the things that I'm doing now with my business are the things I really want to do and the things that really make me most alive. And that is helping people name and who they are and visually helping them come alive in the sense of their company, their entity, their brand. And so I am most excited about that. I still, Sam, need to get back to music. The last song I wrote was 5 years ago.
Oh.
And, yeah. And so that is something I've put on the shelf for when it feels more comfortable. And I'll tell you, even this conversation is making me feel more comfortable with heading back that way because it's starting to shed the pain from being, and it's like, there's not much pain that I'm finding as we're talking about this because you guys are coming alongside me saying it's okay. I mean, this is cool. This is good. And so I'm even feeling in this conversation and just in the recent couple of weeks with Gary is just more of a, okay, I'm okay. This wasn't as big of a deal and finally I'm getting that perspective I needed back then. And it's like, you know, sometimes we'll be frozen. They say a child gets abused and sometimes grows up as an adult and is some part of his heart still frozen in that time, that age that he was and is abused. And so I think I abused myself in this case, but I think that part of me with music was frozen back in time in my late 20s, early 30s when we made this jump. And it really was unfounded now is what I can say now in this new enlightened perspective that I'm getting just from you men. And just from getting able to just share this and bare my soul here is I think that it's time to pull him up with me and time to awaken that again. And it's okay. And it doesn't mean I'm going to go off and do something foolish and I don't need to fear that.
Yeah. That's so good, Chad. It's so good to have you share all this. It's really been great. I mean, you jumped into your story here on the telephone where you don't even know everybody, you know, but to share is part of your heart. So thank you. It's been really good. And I love the fact that you just kind of, I mean, it's just obvious you're going to have to fight the shame that the world and the enemy wants to put on us and fight the avoidance of risk because of what happened and fight the avoidance of the pursuit of your own heart and your desires because of what happened.
Yeah.
You know, and fight the temptation to give into, well, isolation perhaps is my lot.
Yes.
And not wanting to be isolated is too painful because of, I can't get out of it, you know, so. And it really is, you know, it's just all of our stories. It's so common. So
I know where we are on time and we probably need to wrap this. This insight came to me when we were together in Breckenridge, and I don't know, you probably would not remember this. You've heard so many men's stories. But I had this revelation back in 2008. Okay, we really fell into a financial terrible place for a few years after. We did not recover well from the Nashville thing. So, but long story short, what got us out of that was somebody put me on salary. It really ended up being a 9-month contract is really how I look at it now. But it was a full-time position. It was like I went from having nothing and we were just scraping by and even getting some government help. I mean, it got really low and family helping. But it got to the point, suddenly in a day, I had 2 6-figure incomes chasing me from 2 different locations. And I was almost institutionalized at that time because I felt so down on myself and felt so so broken and felt my confidence was at an all-time low. And this is back in 2007, so just, you know, 3 years after coming home from Nashville. And we, I ended up getting this job with some men that were just some great people for me to be around, and they really helped redefine me and renamed me. Honestly, it gave me a new name. And I went from feeling like a failure and a fool and just, you know, a risk taker who just, you know, really didn't do well, to being called Wonder Kid, Creative Genius, Golden Child. And these men just, who I really respected because they were successful. One had been, you know, a top executive in a large international corporation for some time, and he knew, so when he spoke to me and said I was the best creative he had ever worked with as a creative director, I mean, that it had weight and it meant something to me. And they really, in that period, pulled me out. But I'll tell you, here what was cool. Things started, you know, the economy went wacko in 07, 08, the first rumblings of that earthquake that hit America. And they needed to make some shifts and take resources away from this particular arm that I was working under. And so I had a job, but there wasn't much for me to do, and things were kind of shifting. And I went to my employer, and I knew this was risky, and I felt like, now looking back, I feel like God was giving me this do-over to take a risk again to see if I would do it. You know, how he kind of leads us and helps us, like we do with our own sons. We want to lead them and help them take some risks. And I went to him and basically fired myself. I just asked him, would it help you at this time financially if I left? And he said, well, of course it would help, Chad, but what about your family? Do you have any other offers? Do you have anything else? I said, well, you know, I've always got my own company that I've been running on the side, but I have no clients right now because this is, you know, we're still, and he knew I was recovering from something. I never really fully explained to him what we had been through. But anyway, I ended up 2 more weeks with them and then out on my own. And the day that I was leaving, I had a client that was launching a TV network overseas and a big web project for the next year and a half. And he picked me up, and it was like one after another. It's like we never missed a beat. We never lost in wages. We never went down salary-wise. It was like I took that risk not knowing anything was going to be there. It reminds me of Indiana Jones in The Last Crusade, stepping out into nothing. But what was so cool, and even as I'm talking about right now, it felt like redemption for Nashville. It felt like, okay, cool. We tried it again, and this time it's working. It wasn't moving my family kind of risk, but it was putting my family on the line again, and I didn't falter. I went ahead and did what was right, and I felt like it was the right thing to do integrity-wise, because he was willing to keep paying me for really not doing much, and I wasn't willing to do that.
You know, Chad, Gary unmuted me for a minute. I love the way you ended with that story. I you know, because I know so many guys who will take a risk, and if at the end of that risk it doesn't work, they will never take a risk again. You know, and you just sort of told about a risk, and you look back and say, what the hell happened there? And then you're given another opportunity, and you do it. I mean, I just think that's, sort of the one thing I wanted to say is, when you were talking about your music, there's a way that you know who you are, the ageless. I love that word. I'm going to remember that for the rest of my life, the ageless Chad.
Mm-hmm.
But as you do that, I feel like, and as you sing and as you perform and as people hear your lyrics, you sense people connect with you. You know, there's a way that you overcome isolation. But
yeah.
I've got to tell you, Chad, that during your talk, you know, we're all chatting back and forth, sorry to say this, and guy after guy after guy is saying, I love this, Chad. I love
mm-hmm.
what he's saying. They're saying, he's touching my heart. You know, there's a way, there's something inside you, Chad, that brings other people alive. I mean, there is. As you're sort of dealing with who you are, there's something that brings other guys alive. I'm telling you, I bet everybody who's listened to this is going to be more willing to take a risk to step into the hard part, which is stepping into your calling, than ever before. There's something in you that's really bringing people alive, Chad. I'm so thrilled that I've gotten to know you.
Sam, thank you. I feel the same. I feel, I'm just kind of, actually at this moment, I think I'd forgotten there were other people besides you and I and Gary, because it's the only voices I'm connecting with at the moment, but I'm just kind of picturing us all now around a fire and thinking, when are we going to do this in person?
Thank you so much. This has been so good. So everybody, thank you, and we'll talk again soon.